Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We speak into this atmosphere. We say, let there be light. My topic this month is Yes, You Can, and I'm using the letter U instead of the word Y-O-U because I'm doing a lot of alliteration this month, especially with the letter U. This has been a personal word to me, and I shared with you last week about defying time limits and getting all your stuff done in a day that seems like it's going to be impossible to get done with a whole lot of yes, I can, yes, I can, yes, I can, yes, I can. And last week we talked about the three Hebrew children. I talked about it in a way I've never taught about it before. And it really bears witness with my spirit. You know, it's like the fire reveals you in the fourth dimension. I could say it's God in you is the fourth man, but it really is you're the fourth man, you're the fourth woman. You're the thing that emerges in the midst of the fire if you've made the decision to do those things, to be those things I talked about last week, like unfazed and unleashed. What was the first one? Undeterred. And there is not stubbornness. I don't think stubbornness is a good thing. Scripture says stubbornness is like witchcraft. To say that you're immovable and unchangeable in that way, I think, is a negative, and I think it will do you a disservice. We have to be flexible. Your theology should be in flux. I'm always going to believe in God, but I believe in God in a very different way than I did 20 years ago. I pray, but I pray in a very different way than I did 20 years ago. Yesterday, there's a young girl that's on staff there at Paris and Ponce, and she was talking to me about just some things, really great tips about how to make your merchandise presentable and the way people, even the way you price things, like people won't buy something for $1,000, but they'll buy it for $993. Because psychologically they're not spending $1,000, it's 900 and some change. So just things like that I kind of knew, but it was sort of like a marketing conference. And just, you know, she does that kind of thing. But she said, first, before I come in, I got to get my medicine. I said, what's wrong? She said, I have an infection that I'm dealing with. So we got through talking. I said, can I just do something? And I put my hand on her face. I said, I speak healing. And I pray that you are healed. I meant to say of your infection, but I said healed of your affection. And we both started laughing as I said, oh, no, now you can never find love. Like, I was doing fine until this guy came and prayed that I'd be healed of affection, and now I can't love anybody. We couldn't stop laughing about it. Now I have a private joke with her every time. You know, she said, people are going to be saying, what happened to your love life? I don't know. This guy prayed that I'd be healed of my affection. And now I can't love anybody. But I love that I'm in that kind of atmosphere where I don't have to religiousize it. I don't have to say, you know, let us pray. Because that's not the kind of people that I'm dealing with. That's not... and speak in tongues. Don't start. I want to show you, I started with Philippians 4:13, such a great verse of scripture, usually taken out of context, but a great scripture. Let me just show it to you one more time very quickly before I get into my story. That's JBP, is J.B. Phillips' translation. And what he says is, I am ready for anything through the strength of the one who lives within me. I like that. I love the I can do all things, but I also like the idea of I am ready for anything, because the things that usually get you are the things you're not expecting, right? It's like you can handle the big bills. It's that letter you get in the mail that says you owe the IRS something that you didn't know you owed. And that's really, that's when a lot of times you get your feet knocked out from under you, because you feel like you got it together. And no matter how much you visualize and speak things into existence, there seems to always be something somewhere that you didn't see coming. I didn't see the weather coming this week. You know, I mean, I was all settled into warm spring, early summer weather, and then suddenly it was like winter then again. You know, I had to go pull those jackets down that I'd already put away for the year. So there's always, and I think that's why it's important this month to even use the word spontaneous, because sometimes your reaction needs to be spontaneous. Your confession is not what you say when you're in your best behavior. Your confession is what you say when you're by yourself, when those quiet moments, when you get some news that you weren't expecting, and you're like, wow, I didn't see this coming, but you know what? I'm ready for anything. That's very powerful. Once you realize you're ready for anything, you can get through anything. So I'll come back to that, but you know, last week I talked out of the book of Daniel. I want to go back to Genesis. I know this is a lot of Old Testament for me. But, you know, the stories in the Old Testament are actually a little more colorful than the New Testament stories. I love the New Testament, but the Old Testament's got some really meaty stories that it doesn't matter to me if they actually happened or if they've been embellished or what. I think there is at least a kernel of truth in all of them. Absolutely. The writers may have spun the story a little bit or added to it. But again, that's not the point. The point, like I told you last week, if I mentioned the tortoise and the hare or the boy that cried wolf, it doesn't matter whether that literally happened. You get the moral of the story. That's rightly dividing the scripture. I certainly have talked about Joseph, and I've talked about him again this week because, you know, my coat of many colors is in my studio, and of course, that's like the first thing people ask about when they walk in. So the Joseph story has always been with me and still is. I want to look at it today again with these letters, you, and the words I want to talk about today are unbroken. I forgot what the next one was. I'll get to it. This is Genesis chapter 50, verse 14 through 17 in the Message. This is after, I'm assuming you're familiar with the story. If you've listened to me for any length of time, you have to be, because I talk about it all the time. One day, we hadn't been together, Ken and I hadn't been together too long, and I was telling him something about Joseph. I said, you're aware of the Joseph story. And he said, vaguely, I remember hearing it in Sunday school, but I don't remember my pastor ever really talking about it. So you remember that day we were just sitting there at Jason's Deli over here. We were sitting outside, and I started telling him the story of Joseph, and I got overwhelmed, and I'm sobbing, telling him, he's crying. People are looking at us like, "Are you all okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm just telling him about Joseph and his brothers in the Bible." And I thought, "Wow, I'm surprised that this story resonates with me so much." But anybody that's ever been betrayed or lied about or whatever, you can relate to this, because enemies are one thing, but when the closest people to you turn on you, it's just the worst. And I'm also fascinated with this concept of Joseph. He was a prophetic dreamer, and so he would tell these dreams to his brothers. And I don't have siblings, but I've been around. My children are siblings, so I know there's something about the way he told them that definitely aggravated them. You know, it's something when you say, "God showed me this dream that y'all are all going to bow down and worship me, and I'm gonna be greater than all of you." You know, older siblings kind of don't want to hear that. So with the Joseph story, it's kind of the chicken and the egg thing. Like, which came first? Were these inevitable things that he was seeing in the future that he was telling them, or did he actually make it happen by provoking them with these dreams? And he was so confident about the dreams, and then I'm not even talking about the idea that Jacob clearly favored him over the other brothers. And because, you know, Jacob had had those sons with four different women. And the one that he was really in love with was the mother of Joseph and Benjamin. And Jacob also understood the power of a prophetic image. Remember, Jacob's the one, according to the scriptures, that, remember, he whittled the spots and specks all over the rods and put them for the cows, and they gave birth to spot and speckled cows. Well, when he makes this coat of many colors for Joseph, what he's saying is, you're special. Your life is not going to be like these other guys, and this coat is an outward manifestation of an inward reality. And, you know, Joseph wore that thing around his brothers till they said, you know, I don't think I can see him wear that and tell me about his dreams one more time. As a matter of fact, this actually was on when they first buried Dr. King, before they moved him over here to the King's, before they moved his body to the King Center. Now his grave says, "Free at last, free at last." But what it originally said was out of this scripture, says, "Let us kill the dreamer and see what will become of his dream." And there's a really powerful idea in that non-dreamers resent dreamers. They just do. And non-dreamers think that dreamers are just being arrogant, when really they're not necessarily. They're just telling their truth as they see it. Anyway, this is after, I mean, these brothers stole his life from him. I mean, they sold him into, first of all, they were going to kill him. Then one of them interceded for him. They ended up just selling him to some Ishmaelites. He was sold into slavery. They lied to their father and told him that Joseph was dead. He's taken into Egypt, becomes a slave boy for this guy named Potiphar, whose wife was hitting on him. And she keeps making advances at him, and he, you know, rejects her. Well, then she lies and says that he raped her. So he gets thrown into a prison for basically his teenage and his young adult life. Not just in prison, but prison in a foreign land where you don't speak the language, you're in a different culture. Then, you know, the story about how the new Pharaoh had imprisoned two of his employees, and Joseph got this, wherever he was, he rose to the top. You know, like when he was in prison, he became the guy that was in charge. When he was in Potiphar's house, he became he thrived wherever he was. And, you know, I've taught on this before about how even when his brothers tore the coat of many colors, that by that point he had internalized it, so it wasn't, the coat was just a symbol of a inward reality. And so he interprets the guy's dreams, and he says, when you go back in front of Pharaoh, remember me. Well, they forgot about him for another 2 years in prison. So long story longer. He finally is brought before Pharaoh, and then Pharaoh has this dream about the seven fat cows and seven skinny cows, and Joseph interprets it. He says that we're having 7 years of bumper crop and 7 years of famine. So if we use these years of excess to store the food in these grain silos, we'll survive the famine. Well, he did it, and it was a huge success, and all of the neighboring nations had to come to Egypt because that's where all the food was. And that's how he reunited with his brothers, because they were starving in Canaan, and they came to Egypt and didn't even recognize him, because he had, you know, a kid could change a lot, especially a kid that you think is dead. You know, you see him, last time you saw him, they were 12 or 13. Now they're late 20s, early 30s, maybe. They can look entirely different. So they didn't recognize him. And I won't go through all the detail, but they had some drama that happened with them reuniting. This story picks up with after Jacob has died, and now these guys, well, let me just get into it and I'll show you. The first you I'm using, yeah, unselfish, that's it. The first you that I'm using for yes, you can, is the word unselfish. Now listen, I don't like when people say it's not all about you, because it is a lot about you. But just because things are about you doesn't mean you can't be the center of your own universe. Do you understand? Love yourself? Yes. High self-esteem? Absolutely. Confidence? Can't live without it. You've got to have all those things. You've got to believe in your gift. You know, one thing that impressed me Friday night, we saw Jerry Seinfeld. He had done a show before. We saw him at the 10 o'clock show. Packed out Fox Theater. But he was clearly having problems with his voice. You could just tell he was. And you know, he had just done a show, and now he's doing an extra show. And he's 62. I mean, you know, I mean, it's not unbelievable that he could have some voice problems. What I loved about it is he never mentioned it. He never drew attention to it. He never walked out and said, "You guys, I hope y'all just pray for me because I'm having trouble with my voice tonight." I was waiting for him to say, "Devil, you're not going to keep us from having this comedy store tonight. Devil's been attacking me." He killed. He came out. He was hysterically funny. He did mostly brand new material because I've listened to him a lot. He did a couple of jokes I heard before, but most of it was all new material, very funny. He knew a lot about Atlanta. He did jokes about the bridge falling and about traffic. And there's also, I don't know if you know the comedian Mario Joyner. He was on right before him. And they're both good comedians that aren't filthy. They're not, you know, you could basically sit with your kids and not be embarrassed. And some of the filthy ones are funny, I'll admit. But I'm also like, oh, my God, I can't believe they said that. And I wouldn't. There are some people I would go see that I wouldn't check in. You know, we don't quote me on this, but we went to see the Chips movie yesterday, about the remake of the Chip, and it was funny. But I told Ken, I said, "I'm not going to review this one." it was a little more R-rated than the TV show was. I said, let's just keep this one between us. Because I know if I say Chips is good, people are like, "Bishop said it was great. Let's take the kids." No, don't take the kids. Just watch the TV show. But anyway, I thought it was interesting to see a professional work like that because he gave it his all. And it wasn't like he was in a whisper, but I mean, I could just tell from someone who I've had the same challenges. And these people have bought tickets, so you got to deliver. You can't say, "I don't feel like it tonight." I don't know what that had to do with being unselfish. How did I connect the dots over to there? Anyway, Okay. The bottom line is yes, believe in yourself. Yes, self-image, self-confidence, all those things are essential, even to being godlike, because God believes in himself. Jesus believed in himself. Jesus never spoke badly of himself, and he just wouldn't give it up. But you can't live completely unto yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you can't get there by yourself. I don't care who you are. I'm all for, yes, personal responsibility, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, whatever. But all of us are the sum total of everybody that's ever influenced us in our lives. I mean, you know, there's so many things that you pick up. Even if you had a negative relationship with your parents, there's things that you picked up from them that serve you to this day that you don't even think about. That's just part of your, it's just the way you are. Sometimes you don't want to see how much you are like them, but you are. And so you have to learn how to know who you are, know what your strengths are and play to them, know how to complement yourself with people who are strong in areas that maybe you're not strong in. God knows I've built a life on that. Blanche DuBois said, "I've always depended on the kindness of strangers." And I obviously depend on the kindness of people who are in covenant with me. But I got to tell you, I've been in situations so many times in my life that strangers came by and helped me that I honestly thought it must be angels. I can't tell you the times that somebody's just been there at the right place, the right time, and said, do you need this, do whatever, that I didn't even ask them to do it. They just came in and helped. And I'm always aware, I believe in what I do, but I believe in what you do as well. I mean, sometimes, even as scaled down as our operation is, when I'm, you know, telling everybody goodbye and everything, I'm watching these guys tear down the equipment and store it under here like they do every Sunday without fail. Like, nobody's ever not, I mean, sometimes they're not here, but we know they're not going to be, you know what I mean? It's not like nobody just didn't show up or whatever. And I thought, wow, that's, because I hate, I hate paraphernalia. I don't want to, people say, why don't you have a toolbox? Because then I'll have to fix stuff. If I have a toolbox, then suddenly I'm responsible for fixing things when I don't want to do that. I mean, I do have some tools, but not a toolbox. That's too much. Ken has a toolbox. Anyway, I've got a lot to say, so let me get into the story. It says, after burying his father, Joseph went back to Egypt. All his brothers who had come with him to bury his father returned with him. After the funeral, Joseph's brothers talked among themselves. What if Joseph is carrying a grudge and decides to pay us back for all the wrong we did him? I mean, these guys are really self-absorbed, you know. Instead of saying, how are we ever going to make it up to this guy? They're like, I think he's going to kill us. And, you know, let me tell you this. If you haven't learned this, I'm going to help you with something right now. The people who always think you're trying to do them badly are people who do people badly. Do you know what I mean? The scripture says, to the pure in heart, all things are pure. Always, there may be some exceptions, but few. If somebody's always calling you a liar, they're a liar. And they're judging everything that you're doing by how they would do it. There was a line in The Green Mile, that movie with Tom Hanks, and was the big guy that he died, Michael Clark Duncan. He was really the Jesus figure in that movie, John Coffey, JC, Jesus Christ. But Percy, the guy that was such a bad, he was kind of like the bad thief on the cross. I mean, it really is it's the whole thing's a parable written by Stephen King. It's funny because Stephen King can write horror, but he writes power. He wrote The Shawshank Redemption, which is also a very strong parable. But there's something, you know, these guys, they don't mean evil to Percy. They're trying to keep him from doing something. And there's something that he says, they tied him up or something, and he says, are you going to do something to me? And Tom Hanks says, you would think that's what we were going to do. And I thought, that's the way it is with people. We don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. So these guys were manipulators from the beginning. And here they are, you know, the father's just buried. And they're like, what's our angle? What's our strategy to make sure he doesn't hurt us? Instead of thinking, how can we? Well, first of all, just their lack of discernment. Like, how do you not know that he's not even bitter? So anyway, they sent Joseph a message before his, this sounds like, Dad said, before his death, your father gave us this command. Tell Joseph, forgive your brother's sin, all that wrongdoing. I'm not sure Jacob actually said it, but they're like, you know what Dad said? Don't ever be, his last breath was, don't ever be mean to your brothers. These guys. They did treat you very badly. Duh, you think? Will you do it? Will you forgive the sins of the servants of your father's God? When Joseph received their message, he wept. Why did he weep? Yes. Like, wow, after all this time, there's such a melancholy to the lyrics of that song, You Don't Know Me. Because the saddest thing in the world is to be in love with somebody that has no idea who you are. And here, you know, these guys are really, pardon the pun, showing their true colors. So he probably wept for several reasons, but yes, I think it's that one. Like, how do you, I'm really trying to reconcile with you guys, and you are still seeing me through this prism. You still think I'm like you. Yes. And the reason I use the word unselfish, if this is a motivational teaching, yes, you can. But part of being strong and able and being able to do all things through Christ strengthens you is you're going to have to be unselfish with selfish people. I mean, really, all the recorded statements of Jesus on the cross are lifestyle explanations. One of them is, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. It took me a minute to get here, but even over the last 7 years, people that I felt like really close to me that kind of turned on me, I'm to the place now, I honest to God feel compassion for them. Because I know the way they contact me in my inbox, I'm still their pastor. They miss me. They miss the word. They hate where they're going to church. But they're either in bondage to some religious legalism or family members that wouldn't understand why they would still be connected with me. And you know what it makes me think of? Remember when the rich young ruler came to Jesus? And he says, I want to follow you. And Jesus said, well, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And it says he went away. I don't think he was even asking the guy to really do that. He was just, he was challenging him. And it says he went away with great sorrow because he had many riches. I'm not even mad at people anymore now. I think, wow, you're really in bondage to some legalism that I'm happy that I'm free. I'm happy that I'm on the other side of it. I'm happy that I'm non-judgmental. I'm happy that even as recently as yesterday, somebody, I don't even know who this guy is. I mean, out of 5,000 friends, there's some people I don't even remember how we connected on Facebook. But he was posting something about didn't understand how people who had been redeemed could get tattoos. And people were talking about and I thought, really? Are y'all really having the tattoo argument? Like, really? And like, you know, a long thing of people arguing. And I thought, wow, I'm in such a different world than that. Like, it wouldn't even be worth it to me to have the energy to argue about it. Like, what? You don't observe most of anything Moses said. Why would you obsess over this? And it honestly makes me feel sympathy/compassion. Like, wow, that's really who you think God is. I found this quote by Bono yesterday. He says, religion to me is like when God leaves and people come up with a system of rules to fill in the space. And I thought, yeah, that's kind of exactly what it is. Even when somebody says, don't you know the Bible says so and so? I'm like, yeah, right. Sure it does. Bible says lots of things. If you want to start some finger wagging, I can wag right back at you. But it's not, I don't care. If that's what you want to believe, if you're gonna dumb down and limit your God to that, do you know what I really believe about that kind of thing? I think when your God's that limited through a prism of legalism, he's limited in power as well. Do you know what I mean? When you really need a miracle, how do you get a miracle from the God that's freaking out over somebody putting some ink on their arm? I mean, personally, I kind of need a bigger God than that. I need a bigger God that says, might not be my personal taste, but I don't really have an opinion about it. And furthermore, don't have to have an opinion about it. Why do you think religious people just got so rankled at Jesus? Oh, they're not against us or for us. Ooh, you can't say that to people that have the lines very clearly drawn between us and them. So anyway, the you in Yes You Can is being selfish, because this is what I love about Joseph, and I will meet him in some dimension somewhere. I will have a long talk with him. I love this because, in a sad way, because his response is not, I can't believe you got, it's not, he's not even defending himself. He just weeps. Then it goes on. This is verse 18 through 21, also in the Message. And I want to look at the word unbreakable. It says, then the brothers went in person to him, threw themselves on the ground before him and said, we'll be your slaves. I mean, they're trying this from every angle. Again, his reaction would still have to be, oh my God, you still don't get it. I'm not trying to kill you, and I don't want you to be my slaves. Let me tell you something about revenge. Revenge is very dissatisfying. I'll tell you this, and I try not to bring up hot-button political topics, but just indulge me on this. I don't know what I think about the death penalty. I mean, generally, I'm against it, but there are some cases where I think, when they executed Timothy McVeigh, I was like, you know what, good, because a signal needs to be sent to people that you can't just go up and, you know, kill innocent people like that. But I am conflicted about it. I'm just going to tell you the truth. You know, I don't think you're that shocked. And one reason I am is I've talked to people and read people who have said, yeah, I went to see the execution of the person who killed my whoever, and it didn't fix anything. It certainly didn't bring them back, and it didn't make me feel any better. If anything, I just felt more depressed for the parents of the guy that, the parents of the son that killed my son. I felt bad. I wasn't mad at them. I felt horrible for them. You know what I mean? It's like, and again, I'm not, I don't know what I would feel if somebody killed a close one. I mean, you don't know until you're in that position. All I can tell you is just revenge for revenge's sake. It's just very dissatisfying. I've had things that have happened to people who have done bad things to me that really sobered me. Some things I never even told. Like when I'd hear what happened to them, I was like, oh man, that's just, I hate that for them. I mean, when you think your response would be, that sounds about right, you know, it's not that at all. You're like, ugh, I hate that that's how you see the world. And if I'm going to take anything away from this, I'm going to learn not to see the world like you see it. You can call me a Pollyanna all you want to. I'm going to believe the best in people. I'm not going to assume that everybody's out to get me. Everybody's out to play me. I just can't do it. I saw that for too many years in traditional church settings where it was so political and so many people had agendas. And I, you know, for whatever church that I was or wasn't, I never ran it like I saw a lot of churches run. And that's no reflection on my dad. He was unwittingly a part of a system that he was born into. But it's just a lot of really, well, it's what Paul called wood, hay, and stubble. Like a lot of stuff that people think is doing something for the kingdom of God, it's really just doing something for themselves. You know? But Joseph replied, and this, you know, when Romans 12:21, Paul says, be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. He says, don't be afraid. Do I act for God? Don't you see you planned evil against me, but God used those same plans for my good? As you see all around you right now, life for many people. And I fully believe Joseph meant what he was saying. I'm trying to see it this way. He's like, no, we had a happy ending. If you hadn't done what you did, we would have all starved in Canaan. He says, easy now. Whew. You have nothing to fear. I'll take care of you and your children. He reassured them, speaking with them heart to heart. You know what I could just as easily say in this point is love always wins. And if you're going to be unbreakable, you have to be a lover. selfish people always, there's too much sowing and reaping, too much karma. It's like they end up badly. People who just love and forgive. And the other day I was just gonna tweet this for some reason. I've gotten to where I really think about something I tweet, because people, with the climate on social media, people read so much into everything you say. They think you're talking about a political thing, whatever. Like, no, these are just quotes I like that resonated with me. I thought you might enjoy it. But I was just gonna write the other day, I know my way around the high road. Because I do. I can give you directions to the high road. Because in the end, the high road always takes you to success. It always does. It always leads you to a better place. It's not easy to always take the high road, but it will always, love never fails, love never loses. Love means that you don't always get to prove your point. Well, as a matter of fact, we had this conversation about Ken's dad's birthday thing and my birthday thing. I said, you know what? There are some things that you're willing just to let go because you love people and you want to be with them, and it doesn't matter who was right or who was wrong in a situation. At a certain point, I think having a night like this is infinitely more desirable to me than me making some point and talking something out and demanding some apology that's not going to matter anyway, because that's not how they see the situation. And you have to learn this with all of your children, if I can have a little parent conference here. One thing you have to remember about your kids, they may not be as mature as you are. And you have to not ever say that to them, but there are certain things when you're the adult, there are certain touchstones where you realize, this lets me know I'm actually a grown-up, because I'm willing to let this slide because I want this. Do you know? Because I meet people that, I know somebody that's so politically opinionated that just because their father put a bumper sticker on his car about a different person than they thought should be elected, they never spoke to him for the rest of their life. Now, that's ridiculous. I believe you should care about politics. I certainly believe you should vote. I don't believe you should go for the rest of your life and not see your father because of a bumper sticker. What? And when you see people who are caught in that kind of self-absorption and pride and stubbornness, after a while you think, man, is it worth it? Y'all don't start quoting The Help here. I've got another quote from The Help. But you remember when the main character, what was the maid's name that Viola Davis plays? Anyway, she goes to Miss Healy, who by the way is Ron Howard's daughter, Bryce Dallas. But she really plays, is one of the most unlikable characters you've ever seen in a movie. And she's never redeemed in the movie. She never sees the error of her ways. But there's this one thing where they're lying about one of the maids, and Viola Davis's character comes right up to her, and she says, "You a godless woman." She says, "Ain't you tired, Miss Healy? Ain't you tired?" There's something about the power of that. Like, when people live in that kind of darkness and prejudice and can't ever change, you just want to ask them, don't you get tired of it? I mean, for me, frankly, holding a grudge and nursing a grudge for years, somebody is exhausting. After a while, you're like, this is too hard. I'm just going to forgive you for time management. And there kind of seems to be a statute of limitations. I've had people apologize to me for something that happened 25 years ago, and you're like, you know, thanks, but whatevs, you know, too little, if it made you feel better, but too little, too late, you know, everybody's got their, for some reason I was thinking about this, I was thinking about it Friday night, because Ken said, we're going to get a picture with Jerry Seinfeld. I said, I'm not being negative, but he doesn't like, I can tell you this, he's not a people person. He does not like to do that. So I'm not going to tell him. If you think you have the faith for that to happen, fine. Because he's done it with other people that you said we were going to meet, and we did. Jerry, I didn't have faith for. Jerry, I was loved from afar. But I was thinking about how people, because we walked out there and everybody's standing there with stuff for him to sign. Of course, he's not going to sign it. And I remember one night, so I lived in Covington. I don't even remember what was wrong with me, but I was sick, and I went to the drugstore there close to the church. And you know how when you're not even feeling, like you don't even want to get out of the car, whatever thing I was looking for, I don't know what was wrong with me, but I needed it then. You know, where you're just like, oh, God, where's the stuff? I need extra strength. I need whatever. I got to get out of here. And all of a sudden I hear, Bishop Swilly. I was like, oh, no, not right now. And so I turn around, I look in the face of someone that I have no recollection of ever seeing. And this is back when the church was really big. And, you know, people would tell me they were at church. I'm like, I didn't even see you there. I mean, it was kind of like a sea of faces. I didn't know. I know when y'all aren't here. But that was a different setting. And this guy said, do you remember that thing we talked about that time in the lobby? And I'm like, you know, with 103 fever, I said, could you remind me? I don't remember what it was. And he said, you don't remember the stuff that I told you, and you prayed for me, and you told me this? And then I said, can you refresh my memory? I kind of got 103 temperature. If you could remind me. I can't believe you prophesied over me, and you said everything was going to be fine. I said, well, did everything get fine? And he said, well, yes, it did. I said, well, then what's the problem exactly? I mean, it's not like he said, you prophesied everything would be fine, and then it went to hell in a handbasket. And he was basically saying, you know, but he's wanting me to remember minutia of a conversation that I don't even remember when we had. And he got furious at me. I mean, he just said awful things and stomped off. And I'm looking at him like, dude, if you only knew, you know, I mean, I wouldn't remember you if I felt good right now. But the more I thought about it, I thought, well, let me try to get this in perspective. For him, it was a significant encounter, and it made a big difference. So, you know, he sees one of me. I see thousands of people that look like him. So, I just had to let it go. I thought he saw me. He felt like it was a moment we were going to have together, and I just could not be there for what he wanted. And I just had to say, Father, forgive them. He knows not what he does. I'm like, he doesn't know. He probably will never get it. He probably went out and said, I met that Swilly in the store, and he's such a jerk. He would, you know, and that's probably what the people that he told believed. And so, you know, there you have it. What you have to do, as I've told you for years, you got to play by the rules whether anybody else does or not. You got to forgive even if they don't forgive you. You got to love even if they don't love you. You got to, all that stuff about return evil for good and love your enemies, all that kind of stuff. It is not easy, but it is the way of the winner. And yes, you can. So the reason I use the word unbreakable here is I really do believe if you get sucked into the agenda of somebody else, like these brothers are manipulators. Joseph is just a very different, you know, sometimes you see somebody and you meet one of their siblings and you're like, how did y'all come from the same family? I mean, Jimmy Carter and Billy Carter. You know, you think, well, how did they come from the same, like such different type men? Paul says we wrestle not against flesh and blood. If you get into a flesh battle with somebody, it makes you fragile. It makes you vulnerable to what's coming out of their mouth. I'm telling you, love is the more perfect way. It just is. And I'm not saying it's always easy, but it will always take you to where you need to go. So when I say yes, you can, I'm saying you're unselfish, you're unbreakable. And then I love this last thing. It's the word, this is verse 22 through 25, Genesis chapter 50, in the Message. Unforgettable, that's what you are. It says, Joseph continued to live in Egypt with his father's family. Joseph lived 110 years. He lived to see Ephraim's sons into the third generation. The sons of Machir, Manasseh's son, were also recognized as Joseph's. At the end, Joseph said to his brothers, I am ready to die. God will most certainly pay you a visit and take you out of this land and back to the land he so solemnly promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel promise under oath, when God makes his visitation, make sure you take my bones with you as you leave here. Now, I'm not specifically talking about what you do with your body after you die. That's your decision. I do believe, like I know people that bury a loved one and the grave kind of becomes a touchstone where you visit on significant days, and it's, you know, they're not there, but it's some place you can make contact. I know other people, you know, I'm going to bring the room down, but cremation has become much more popular. In the early days of my ministry, I never did a service for anybody that was cremated. Now, the majority of the ones I do are. It's just different time, and some people, I don't think it'd be my personal choice, although I have to. Hi, Mom. Mom and Dad have grave plots, but they've decided they want to be cremated. Okay. What are we going to do with these plots you got with your name on it? Well, they want their ashes put in the plots because it's a family. Okay, fine. So it's been bugging that they want to make sure I was going to do it. And I said, all right, this is what I'm going to do. If that's what y'all want, which one of you goes first, I'll keep your ashes until the other one goes. If it's 6 months later, if it's 20 years later, whatever. Then when you're both gone, I'll take my kids down to South Georgia and we'll inter them, and your remains will be next to grandmother and all that. And Dad said, and also, he doesn't like that they made a mistake and they've got his grave next to grandmother's and not mom's. He said, I want that switch. I said, I promised you I will get it. It's not going to happen before we eat this pizza, so let's... Could we finish this before we start the organ music? Or if you scatter ashes somewhere, then that place that you went may be a place that you want to visit. But there, I'm talking about something, when I talk about being unforgettable, I'm talking about something much deeper. I'm talking about the legacy that you leave on the world. Not where they took your bones. That's one thing. But what are people going to remember about you? I mean, I try to... I'm meeting new people every day at Paris and Ponce, and it's actually cool because they're it's a totally different type of person. Like, these are people that are not coming in not seeing me as a minister first. I'm just meeting people as me. And it's interesting, and I actually enjoy it, and I enjoy the conversations, and it's just good. And I try to leave everybody with something worthwhile, because I don't know if I'm ever going to see that person again. So I don't mean that I'm like just pretentiously profound. I don't mean that, but I mean just something to say to somebody. Like, there was a woman who was looking at my paintings. And we were talking, and she walked out, and she came back in and was looking at him again. And she said, what does this one mean? And I was explaining it to her. And I said, you know, she was raised Catholic. She had some understanding of the scriptures. I said, you know that story where Peter is preaching in Acts, and he rebukes the religious people for, he said, you crucified an innocent man. He rebukes him. But in the next breath, he says, but it happened exactly as God planned it. And I say, that's an interesting concept to me, that there can be parallel realities. He's rebuking them, but he's also saying it happened as it was supposed to. so that if you know how to look at it, the worst thing that ever happened to you could turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to you. And she said, well, she didn't give me a lot of details, but she had cancer many years ago. And she went through chemo and all that. And I'm conflicted. I'm frankly conflicted about chemo. I just think I'm always interested to hear success stories with it, because I would rather hear more success stories. And she went through it and was very successful. And she said, I got to tell you, it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me. It made me reevaluate my life. She said, now, the day the doctor told me I had it, I thought it was, you know, the end of the world. But she said, now, in retrospect, I realize it actually made me a better person. I don't take life for granted, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you sound like that's the way I preach. That's what I believe. I'm very practical. But I said, I'm glad to hear your story. I always want to leave somebody with something. I'm sure you've read this quote. Is this the Maya Angelou quote? No, let me read this guy first. Charles William Eliot. He says, talking about being unselfish. He says, be unselfish. That is the first and final commandment for those who would be useful and happy in their usefulness. If you think of yourself only, you cannot develop, because you are choking the source of development, which is spiritual expansion through thought for others. So I truly believe that. Then I've got a quote about being unbreakable. These are all the U's for yes, you can. This is the great Friedrich Nietzsche, who says, that which does not kill us makes us stronger. And, you know, I know people say that a lot, but it really is true. It really is true. And then this one is one of my favorite ones. This is the quote about being unforgettable. Maya Angelou said, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. And as recently as when I went to my 40th high school reunion, I still had people telling me, you know, Jimmy Swilly, we used to walk to that homeroom, it just seemed like the whole room lit up. You know, you walk in with your little cocky self and say something funny and make the whole class laugh, and the teacher might not have liked it, but it got us through the day. I used to have people write to me in my yearbook, you led me to Christ. And I'm like, when? When did we? I didn't even know. I did? You want to believe that you've made an impact on somebody. So, I mean, think about the conversations that you have. I look at some of you with your pictures, look at you pictures with your granddaughter or whatever, and I spend a lot of time with my granddaughters, and I take a lot of pictures, and I make no apology for it, because I'm not going to always be here, and I want them to remember something about me. Because I think about, now, I was super close to my maternal grandmother. With my grandfather, and in fairness to all of them, by the time I came along, I don't even know what number I was, but both my Swilly and Paul grandparents had a lot of grandchildren by the time I was born. So, you know, just realistically, there's only, you know, I was already past that number where I was just another one. I'm just telling you, that's the way it is. But this is what I think about. My granddaughters go to the grammar school I went to. And I'm at least 3 days a week, I'm driving down the little street there where all of them lived, and all my mom's siblings lived on that street. And I just have two or three memories of doing something with my grandfather. Like, I remember taking a walk with him. I remember him taking me somewhere and buying something for me. They're very limited. But I think about them nearly every time I pass that spot. So I know if you can make any impartation, like my girls are, Pokemon has made a big comeback. So they're both into it, and they had little stuffed whatever. And they're looking at my paintings yesterday that we went by the Christina's and picked them up and brought them back to the studio. And Olivia says, Poppy, can you paint a picture of Pikachu? And I thought, heck yeah. This is one thing I can do. So I said, show him to me. And she's explaining. She says, I know this part of his eye, he's brown on the animal, but I want it black. I'm like, oh, got it, whatever. And then Sophia wanted hers drawn. And I thought, I'm going to take this moment, something that's important to them, something that matters to them, and just create a little memory with them, you know? I mean, I'm not planning on going anywhere anytime soon, but I would like to think someday if they ever do speak at a service of mine, those two girls will have endless anecdotes to tell that will all be fun, and Poppy was fun, and Poppy did this. And Poppy, I mean, I want them to have that. Because you got to, you know, you only have a limited amount of time to make an impression on somebody. I don't like that feeling when I walk away from a conversation. I think, I don't like the way I left that. I don't like the way something feels heavy about the way that conversation ended, and I don't like it. Because, I mean, I've counseled with too many people over the years that stormed out of a house and left mad, and somebody died in a car wreck, and the person is tortured because they left them with bad words. That's why the scripture says, don't go to bed with don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Meaning, if you can resolve a situation, do it. And if nothing else, then just be at peace. Just say, well, we clearly see this situation differently. Let's just agree to disagree. But I want to believe I've left a good. I can't say that I have with everybody. I mean, I haven't been perfect, but I really try to. I want to create a legacy when my name comes up. Even if people say I don't agree with this theology, but I'll tell you one thing, that guy, he hung in there. Or if nothing else, you know, you couldn't. He just kept preaching or kept doing his thing or whatever. I can't tell you the people that will, people I've never met, may not ever meet, who even this week will write me and say, I look at your picture, I look at your life every day, and you give me hope. Like I know men that have come out that their children don't speak to them. And, or people who say, you know, I don't think I can ever have a ministry. Well, I do. And sometimes it's a lot of pressure. I'm like, oh, don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. That's too much. I don't want to be everybody's poster boy for a happy ending. But I have to. That just means, well, you have to end up with a great life. You have to end up blessed and successful and wealthy and happy and healthy. And I mean, you're just going to have to. This is what you've done your whole life. It's shown people through even your own personal humiliations. All right, here's how you do this with a little class. Hopefully I've done that, and I believe we're all wanting to do that. So, yes, you can be unselfish, know that you're unbreakable, and live a life that's unforgettable. Yes, you can. Let's all stand. Unforgettable. In every way. Hi, where are you from? Unforgettable. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiters. That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am. People have just now tuned in. Why is he singing Unforgettable? Unforgettable too. That boy's crazy. Please remain standing. If you will show the official ending and I'll speak a blessing.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy.
It's loud.
Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044.
Easy peasy.
And now you can give anytime by texting this number.
Anytime.
You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then, my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, just make the JESM, and Danny will take that for you. Appreciate it. If you have cash, pay it forward. That'll make you unforgettable. Give somebody some money. Don't forget, next Sunday's Easter, so we're expecting a good crowd, and we're going to do brunch. And it always works out. I don't know how it works out, but the number in the lounge over there always works out exactly as it's supposed to, so I don't expect next week to be any different. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to pay anything in advance. It's just like a bunch of us going out to eat together in one spot. That's all it is. So that will be great. On this Palm Sunday, we do remember Jesus. Remember the triumphal entry. Jesus the King. Jesus the Conqueror. Jesus who did something that was the ultimate act of unselfishness, so that we could identify with it, so that we could believe under righteousness. So we do celebrate that. We may not talk about it all that much, but we still believe in it, and we love it. Believe in a literal resurrection. The same Jesus, the same God, same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead dwells in us and quickens our mortal body. I speak health to you. I speak life to you, peace. Have a beautiful day. Have a beautiful week. We will have a beautiful service next Sunday and celebrate Easter and celebrate life. Life always conquers death. Be unselfish this week. Remember that you are unbreakable, and do something that makes you unforgettable. You wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Love you so much. Bye.